Good afternoon and or good middle of the day to New York. This is this week's What Comes Next Live, going out on a Tuesday, November the 16th. And my guest this week, all the way from New York, is my friend Gene Chung. Gene uses lots of really cool language, but to say Gene is kick-ass would be language that she might not attribute to herself, but she is on a mission to, and she'll talk to you more about it, to support kick-ass women. Gene and I met in April 2018 in Baja, California at the Modern Elder Academy. So connecting the dots back to Chip Conley, past guest on the show. And we ended up going to a wedding of somebody in our cohort in Northern California a couple of months after that. And Gene was so exhausted from doing startup stuff that, having driven her beat up Land Rover, which I know is a passion of hers, up to the river where we're going paddling, she just looked so tired. I said, don't worry, I'll just paddle canoes. So she spent the next few hours explaining to me what she was doing then with her purpose-led venture, which she's still doing, and it will morph and change as it does with startups. But welcome to Gene Chung of Mighty Menopause.
Wonderful. Thank you, Tom. It's so exciting to be here. I'm really looking forward to our conversations. We've had such great conversations in the past, so I've no doubt this will be a good one as well.
Absolutely. And kind of keeping it down to roughly half an hour is probably going to be my biggest challenge. But I'm here to listen to what's going on for you. So perhaps start out with a little bit about how you got to where you are today, and what's on your mind and what's now and what's next.
Yeah, absolutely. I like telling this story because I used to think about my professional career, my life career, as very disjointed, and I couldn't really find any through lines. And what I'm doing right now kind of pulls on everything in my past, which feels really good because it feels really kind of integrated. So the trajectory is raised by a tiger mom, started a very predictable path out of university, engineering school, then consultancy, then business school, and then investment banking. And that was just very, very predictable and enjoyable, and it pushed myself and I learned a lot. And then I quit being an investment banker and became a yoga teacher, which was pretty much the full 180, completely mm-hmm. different direction. And a couple things that triggered that. One was the NASDAQ, the first internet boom busted. And I was a tech investment banker, and it's a really just awful job to be an investment banker when the market is down. And the reflection in that, not only that the job was hard, but I realized that I was looking at everyone around me, and I realized like I was on the path also becoming just a proper asshole. So I was like, I don't know that I want to be on this path, and I'm going to make a change. So I quit. And then I was in San Francisco, and as you do in San Francisco, you just do yoga. And I was doing a ton of yoga. And I was motivated by a friend in a class to go to yoga teacher training. I became a yoga teacher, and it was really this massive shift. I didn't think I'd be able to be an effective teacher. I didn't think I would be kind of motivating enough, or articulated enough, or good enough. And it's something that just really resonated, and I loved it, and I found that I was quite impactful being a teacher, and it pushed me in this completely different trajectory. So you think about before, I was like big organizations, university, like recognizable degrees, like all that stuff. And I'm in this place where I'm teaching yoga, I'm teaching part-time, going from studio to studio, and then I had this opportunity to open a yoga studio in Singapore. To leave San Francisco and go to Singapore. And this, just thinking about it now, like, it's so wild. I used to think I was not a risk taker at all. And there I was, leaving my friend network, my amazing life in San Francisco, to a place I'd never even been before. I knew no one, to kind of pursue this dream of opening a business studio. Mm-hmm. Business studio, a yoga studio. And that lit my kind of entrepreneurial side on fire. And I spent the next 10 years opening studios and closing some studios, creating a yoga teacher training program, opening a boutique wellness hotel just on the cusp of kind of the boom of wellness, and kind of entering all these different lines of work and these kind of entrepreneurial opportunities that I would never have considered before. Mm-hmm. So that was a massive shift. And the other thing that is kind of the more important part of it for me is I found kind of a vocation, a work where I was working directly with people, like mm-hmm. In the exact moment of transformation, of these aha moments. Mm-hmm. And it was so juicy. And I thought, wow, like it's one thing to close a $20 million deal. It's another thing to watch someone to go from like a shy yoga student to mm-hmm. really passionate yoga teacher where they're mm-hmm. now guiding other people along the path and participating in that and creating that environment for people, so rewarding. And from there, I decided I want to be closer to impact on people.
Right.
So less about creating services or raising money, but more like, how can I impact people directly?
Mm-hmm.
And then the third part is I started to age. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm 53, pretty sure I'm 53. Yeah, so I'm 53. And I started, you know, in my 40s, it's all as it happens for women, the hormonal changes, symptoms start to occur, and there's this new awareness of like this next phase of life, an mm-hmm. awareness that's not really tied to any education.
Right.
So we're all kind of like bumbling around in our daily lives, like what is actually happening?
Mm-hmm.
And as I researched more and more, like what was happening to me, what was out there available for women, the status quo around women's health and the status quo for this kind of youth obsessed culture that older women are trying to like hold their space in society.
Mm-hmm.
And there are all these things that were so compelling. And I was like, I got to figure this out. Like menopause, even 5 years ago, I mentioned the word, it would shut the room down.
Mm-hmm.
Women, men, no one want to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And now it's more commonplace and there is more attention, which is great. But at that time, I was like, okay, this is a thing. It needs to be changed, both when men and women are coiling from it,
mm-hmm.
when it's just a natural process. And from that point, I was like, okay, I'm going to figure this out and fix what I can.
Cool. And I remember sitting with you in that canoe while you downloaded to me, A, about your business, but actually more about where society is, the lack of education of it. So I know things will have moved on. That was 3.5 years ago, but I know things will have moved on in society, but also with what you're doing. I'd love to hear what you're doing now and what's next. The starter point for me, which is, and I've now become an evangelist for awareness around this, as you could probably imagine, because you're quite a force of nature. And, you know, I just want to amplify what I learned from you. And I'm 56, so I, you know a number of women who are, here's the clarity that I first of all didn't have. And I think in the UK, of country 60 million, still similar to the US, does not have this clarity of the distinction between menopause and perimenopause.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting better, but it's quite a shock sometimes for women, and they start feeling symptoms. They start looking at it and they go, oh, I'm not menopausal, I'm perimenopausal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what does that mean? And how long does that last and what it's about? And what can they do for me? And we do have universal healthcare over here, for example, so very different from the US. However, it does have resource constraints.
Yeah.
So the GPs tend to have a very limited playbook they can use.
Yep.
And they go,
absolutely.
Well, put you on meds. And then what if those mm-hmm. meds don't work? And you know, what about the next lot? So where is that? Where is the societal understanding of it? And you know, as a starting point, and what can, because people listening to this will be interested. And you know, where are we with it now? And but then what are you focused on? Because I'd love to hear about that.
Yeah, I look at kind of two directions, really. So from 5 years ago, we weren't really talking about it. It was almost like just clouded and kind of this almost a shame around it. We can't talk about it.
Yeah.
And now it's opening up. Investor companies are launched. Products are out there. Investors are investing. It's in like, it's mentioned in Forbes and New York Times, The Guardian. They're talking about it's this opportunity and there's so much that needs to be done. So we're lifting kind of the level, which is great from a macro perspective. What I also love about it is this nuance then. It's very important nuance that we talked about, which is perimenopause. So if you think like women didn't know about menopause kind of as a broad swath,
mm-hmm.
they didn't know anything about perimenopause, as you know from your friends, as I know from my own experience and all the women I speak to. And so getting to that level of specificity is so valuable.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that is kind of where I'm going. One of the things that I started with was focusing on perimenopause. I designed a supplement specifically for perimenopause symptoms that, in my opinion, is one of the best out there. But that was to really understand that there is a need to recognize hormonal differences in perimenopause and postmenopause.
Right.
And so before I go too deep, it's a very big distinction that, this is what I like to say to people. When you think about menopause and you think just kind of from the medical definitions, ovaries are no longer producing estrogen. So we're thinking, okay, no estrogen. Therefore, all the symptoms, the simplistic interpretation, all the symptoms come from lack of estrogen.
Right.
Like, okay, let's do something about that and let's try to replace estrogen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's one line of thinking. Mm-hmm. The challenge here is that in perimenopause, what happens first, the way I like to describe it, it's like your body's like, okay, this is the last chance, all hands on deck, chuck everything into the system. What happens is estrogen actually goes up.
All right.
It's super volatile. Mm-hmm. And on average, it's very high before it starts to drop.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're in a situation where the mindset is zero, lower, no estrogen. But in reality, women have high estrogen and unpredictable estrogen. So that distinction is hugely important because it impacts design of treatment.
Right.
It impacts understanding of symptoms.
So it's not just HRT. In fact, it's not HRT until postmenopause.
Right. And the challenge there is because we're chucking hormones into women's bodies, and now there's like a regularity because you're getting kind of the same every day,
mm-hmm.
it can have a positive influence.
Right.
But there's larger effect. Like if you keep chucking estrogen in an estrogen high situation, there are a lot of potential consequences there, negative consequences. So with all that being said, when I started to study perimenopause for myself and understanding my symptoms, looking at the information and research, I was like, okay, I got it. Estrogen is high. You need to deal with it. And so putting that message out there as a distinct piece of information that women need to know is very important.
Right.
In a world where menopause is vague, where it's confusing, where there's so many different places to garner information and educate oneself,
mm-hmm.
like having this clear piece of information is really valuable. And that's mm-hmm. what I have been working on mostly since we've talked, since I gave you my whole diatribe.
Yes.
Is that perimenopause. Let's talk about it. Let's find the communities. Let's share why I designed this and how it's impactful. Because mm-hmm. that's the starting point.
Well, that's a new, another layer of learning for me because over here, it's, you know, they really just chuck different HRT pills at people, even if they're in perimenopause. And the menopause definition that I've seen is 12 consecutive months without a period.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. This got blown out of the water with somebody I know who, because they'd had, I think it was fibroids or something, right? Quite seriously for a long, long time. And they had a procedure in their early 40s. That catapulted them into what they thought was menopause.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't had any period since, and it's been many years, right? Then they hit their early 50s, right? And of course, menopause can happen at different ages. And all of a sudden, they're getting all the symptoms. It's fascinating. So somehow, because from some surgical intervention and other things that may have happened to them, as far as they and the doctors are concerned, oh, that's it. Well, you just got catapulted through it and you didn't mm-hmm. have any symptoms. You're all good. And then years later, all of a sudden, they're getting a number of the classic symptoms.
Yes.
You know, hot and cold, moods, all kinds. And they're going, what's mm-hmm. happening to me? And
mm-hmm. right.
So this distinction of you're no longer producing estrogen
mm-hmm.
is important because obviously at some level, but for whatever reason, they weren't then eggs weren't coming out in a period and this kind of thing. And it's, mm-hmm. I feel a little bit odd as a bloke looking at this, but I'm really fascinated by it because it impacts half the world. That's a very important distinction you've got there because it's not the definition the GPs are using.
Absolutely. And there are Yeah, well, there are a couple points I would make. And this is another thing I always try to share, is the word menopause is used in different contexts.
Yeah.
So one is the technical definition, where a doctor would say, it's been 12 months, you haven't had a period, you officially hit menopause, and now you're in like your post-menopause phase. So like you've hit menopause, you've gone through menopause, you're in menopause, like that point where your ovaries are no longer producing estrogen. Mm-hmm. So like there's like a state of menopause.
Yeah.
There's a milestone of menopause.
Yeah.
Then there's also menopause as the transition, mm-hmm. which would include perimenopause. Mm-hmm. So I consider myself like in the menopause transition. My hormones are kind of all over the place, finding their way to a new normal. I consider this menopause, and I say often this is the symptomatic time of menopause.
Right.
Most women have like all these crazy symptoms during the time of transition.
Yeah.
And so when you start reading blogs, like, is it menopause the milestone? Is it menopause kind of the life stage? Is it menopause like we go through puberty, that we also, there's an aspect of menopause, we go through menopause to then be postmenopausal. We go through puberty to be post-puberty, but we never say post-puberty.
Yeah, yeah. That's interesting, right? Isn't
that? Yeah. I always love to share that too, because then it helps people frame when they hear the word menopause, what it actually means.
So is that more of it becomes when you're post, does that mean that things are more stable and stasis than status quo kind of thing?
Well, they're moving towards like the other point of clarification I would provide is you stop having period for 12 months and then you're like in early post menopause. And that's when like things are moving to their new normal, moving to their.
So it's not like flicking a switch.
No, not at all. And then at later post-menopause, this is when for most women, it's totally stable.
Right.
Most women here are like, oh, menopause, I don't remember. Everything's great over here. I'm so happy. Like that stage is waiting for all women. And the other thing I'll add is in your friend's story is this, which I think is where this goes next and where I'm really focused on figuring out how we get there.
Right.
Is right now, it is, without question, guesswork. So your friend had a treatment. She didn't have periods. The GP is like, well, it must be menopause.
Must be. Yeah, they're guessing.
Right. And then they close the file and she goes home. Right. So then 10 years later, she shows up. She goes, holy crap. Like all this stuff is happening. And the doctor looks at the file and says, well, you're supposed to be in menopause. I don't know what's happening. Maybe you have cancer. You know, then they just go to like the other place.
Yeah. Right.
Or they chuck hormones in you and they actually don't understand her. They didn't understand what was happening hormonally at and after her procedure.
Is this what you're looking at now? Is that actually how do we assess, how do we test, how do we do bloods and this kind of thing?
Right. Yeah. And how do we assess hormone levels in a way that will give us longitudinal insight? It's one thing for your friend to have a test at 42 and another test at 52.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, okay, fine. Like we've tested her, but I'm going to tell you those two tests will tell us nothing.
Yeah.
Right. Like, there's really no point. And often the GP will say, well, if we do one test, it's not really useful. And I completely agree.
Mm-hmm.
What I want to get to is where women can test regularly, every quarter, every month. That it's cheap enough and robust enough that a woman can understand how she's changing.
You're in the States. I've got the lens of universal healthcare and proactive medicine. Using that lens for a moment, you know, so it's a wish list for Americans because you have to make it affordable to the individual, whereas here it's affordable to the state, right? In terms of they have to look at, is it a, you know, as we know with certain, I support some medical charities in my role as a coach or facilitator, and some get tons more money than others. Some are sexier, some are better run as businesses, etc. But the actual, you know, life cost or micro noughts to some of them is not level with how much money they get. So how, you know, if I think of it like in a business, this is you as an engineer and an investment banker, right? If we said that, okay, we'll make testing, I mean, there's been a revolution in this in terms of, say, COVID testing. Like it went from nothing to, You know, the government here gives you free lateral flow tests, as many as you want, because they want people. There is a parallel there because they want people testing all the time. Every lateral flow test in the country here goes out with a QR code on it, and they ask you to register it. It doesn't make any difference. It's not for a passport or anything. It's simply so they can have ongoing test results coming through on a national level. So they've decided that makes sense. So, yes, I guess the thing for me would be, if I was looking at it as from a business standpoint, what would be the catalyst? Let's assume we could get to this wonderful world where they test, say, quarterly. You make it affordable and you've got some national level testing on it. What would be the catalyst to start testing? Like if I'm thinking in this conversation, if we reach in this podcast when it goes out to people and you push it out and I send it out, if we reach one woman who gets an easier transition through menopause through this, that is, you know, that's the direct impact that you're talking about. And it means a lot to me as well. And this is, I guess, relatively common. And I'm speaking this with some awareness of the fact I'm a male. It's like, but when would you start testing? What would be the catalyst? And that goes back to what are the initial symptoms that can then be picked up through blood testing as being, okay, this is part of the beginning of the menopause transition.
Got it. I think that there are two ways to look at it. And one is yours, like, is there a reason I need to start testing now? And what is the trigger, like a first symptom, or is it like you hit a certain age, like at 43, women should just start testing? I look at it more on the latter, which is women just need to know in this environment, women are persistently told every woman is different. You could have 43, 73 different symptoms. It is completely useless. So I think women, especially women like me or Gen X women who are educated, empowered, and like to make informed decisions, are really desperate for their own insights and their own data. So one is, can I find women motivated enough to just start? Can it be a pilot program? And I've got funding to get 1,000 women to do this test for a year or two. And they get individual insights. The carrot for them is if you participate in this 1,000 person pilot, as an example, you will then also be able to compare where you are with the population.
Right.
So one of my things that I'm really fixated on too is the bell curve data. So I can't understand if I'm normal or not until I understand what the bell curve looks like. Yes. And that's going to take time and money.
So I'm with you on that. And of course, there's great parallels, often with male health, funny that. So, you know, prostate testing happens at a certain age and different countries have it differently. And as we age, certain tests become done on an age range. So this is, what are you actively focused on now? Is this one of the things to get a pilot going or?
Well, what I'm looking at is first is the world of diagnostic testing and what's a robust test, who's making them, what is commercially viable, what does it look like from kind of, could I get government funding for research? Is there a tie to pharma with it? They could fund the early data, the collection of early data. Because I look at it specifically for menopause, like I want to know as my hormones fluctuate and change, how do I compare to other people? I need to know from my own delta from 40, 45, 50, 55. But I also want to know how it is like compared to other women and how we can tie that to symptom triggers and all of that. Tons of insight. What I see as the future, what comes next after what comes next is if we have this data set for women and let's say I started 35 and I'm continuing to do the test for 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
And the next millennial women come up and they start doing these tests. Then we have this amazing cohort data that can inform all of women's health. It can start to inform later fertility, infertility. It can start to form pharma, biotech. It can start to form AI, machine learning, predictive analytics. It can do all these things that women's health is lacking, particularly, this is my opinion, because we don't have the bell curve data. We don't have any data to run analytics on.
So we are what we measure, right? So And I think, I mean, I think the if we focus on women's health, there's so many things could be looked at because hormones have an impact on propensity to cancers, all kinds of cancers and stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of the simplest thing, the same thing possible occurs to me just from listening to this, you educate me, is if hormones radically fluctuate during the premenopause transition phase, if we start looking at that and we get a good diagnostics, not just for the longitudinal data, but just the individual data, let's just imagine it's on a scale from 0 to 10, right? Mm-hmm. And it says, okay, well, if your hormones, if a norm is at a 5, but yours are running an 8, then this is the supplements we give you, right? Mm-hmm. But if yours are running a 2, then we'll give you a hormonal supplement and we'll give you a bit, you know, something mm-hmm. else. So
right. There
actually is that, you know, I've talked to, you might be surprised quite how many female friends I've talked to about this experience, and nobody ever laughs about it much until mm-hmm. they're the people who are well on the other side of it. And they look back mm-hmm. and go, you've yep. no idea what it's like.
It's like, yep. Yeah, absolutely.
And so, it's, you know, making a very silly, dark parallel, just the one that comes to mind, is that, you know, the COVID has had a massive, massive set of mental health issues on lots of different people. And how we've handled people who've not been able to work. You know, the dignity of labor and people, you know, the Cayman Islands, which is my home island, has had everybody in the tourism industry has been put on paid furlough for a year and a half now. Mm-hmm. And there's no work for them because it's not like they can go work another job because it's a small place. And, you know, what impact does that have? And the impact can be how you structure that and what you do, because if you provide some learning to do at the same time or retraining, people have motivation, et cetera. I'm just sitting at home watching Netflix. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've got half of the population that mm-hmm. definitively will go through a multi-year, because I don't think it's ever less than a year. Mm-hmm. And it could be 3, 5, 7, 10 years, right? Multi-year mm-hmm. period of which will affect lots of things, including those changes and fluctuations are mental health issues as well as yep. physical health issues.
Oh, absolutely. And I've heard a new statistic that there's 2 points where women drop out of the workforce. 1, at their first pregnancy, and 2, at menopause.
And never it has heard that, but it makes perfect sense.
Doesn't it? And it has huge productivity impact. So there's a lot of conversation about dealing with menopause in the workplace and what employers can do. It's a big deal. And I think that I'm really, as you know, dedicated to figuring out. I'm looking at like what are the inroads to get this data? That to me is the huge complicated challenge. But I think it's going to change everything for women.
Well, this whole conversation and everything you talk about on this is so both enlightening and has deep potential power. You know, the language now being used in a lot of the English speaking world is EDI, and it's not equality, it's equity. Equity, mm-hmm. diversity, and inclusion. So it's not everybody getting an equal chance, it's everybody getting the chance they need.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
And in the workforce environment, which is what that's referring to, you know, so much as, you know, you're talking about what we used to call millennials, that you and I are sort of Gen X, Gen Y behind us, but they're all 41 at the oldest age now, right?
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. Gen Y women are the next cohort for menopause transition, for perimenopause.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this is the battleground now. In our adult lifetimes, we've seen issues around sexual orientation become basically a non-issue mm-hmm. In very many places compared to what it was when we were at university, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You're from San Francisco, it's slightly different. It was a bit more liberal then, or a bit more, they fought their battles earlier than some other places. Mm-hmm. But that's not so much an issue. Like the idea of equal pay, while still a massive issue, one of the big reasons why there is a gender pay gap is exactly what the two areas you're talking about, people dropping out to have kids, but also in their perhaps highest earning years, highest productivity years, just mm-hmm. because nobody's had been willing to have a conversation, you know,
yep.
then they go, I'm just not going to deal with it because I'm expected to be this type A executive, right, and I can't function. And yeah, the men in my business aren't going to understand it.
Right.
And other people might take advantage, et cetera. So, you know what, the hell with it, I quit.
Yeah.
So it's a new massive area of focus for equity and inclusion.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what's so compelling about the problem is it's not just do we need more products? Do we need better pharmaceuticals? Do we need more engagement from employers in the workplace? We also need women, right, to, in that way, like the simplest way to put it is like to own it, to understand it, to be with it, to accept it and know like this new phase is happening and not to shrink and not to hide from it. But like, okay, like if my employer is going to talk about it, I've got to step up too. Be like, okay, I'm going through menopause and having some issues. So there's this whole element of agency and women's kind of empowerment, you know, as it relates to agency about like, okay, like it's a thing. I need a support mechanism. I need all the support around me, from my work, from my family, from just energy and vitality. But it's got to be all the things. Like it can't just be my employer is going to drag me through the menopause so I can get into the C-suite.
Yeah, yeah. And well, you're a living example of just owning everything that you are, right? So I just wanted, as my friend, I just wanted to acknowledge that. And this, it's a huge growth space, for society as a whole. And men have their roles as allies. And I hope I do play that and continue, and will continue to, in lots of the meanings of the word ally. And yeah, absolutely fantastic. So what's the, so that's one, that's what you're focused on, right? So,
that's what I'm focused on. Yeah.
So I guess there's been a lot, some really key messages, and you've been in startup world and pitch world long enough that you've done a great job of repeating your messages. but I will just ask you to sort of, it's been wonderful to hear all this, and I'm going to listen back to this so I can pick up the messages. So when I'm out in the world, I get it right. and because you're my authority on this. So what I'd ask you to do, just to have the last word, is just first of all, let us know where people can find you online, and then whatever your last word might be.
Great. So you can find me. My company is called Mighty Menopause. You find it mighty-menopause.com, and you can email me at jean@mightymenopause. It's JEANNE. No. So if you want to talk about anything menopause, talk about the products, I'm happy to hear from any of your listeners. What I'd say to share as like kind of closing remarks is I can't emphasize enough the kind of the nuances and terminology, right? Yeah. Understanding what we're talking about, having some like basic working definition of the differences. For women, it's paramount for us to figure out like how we go down the path. For men, it's also paramount to have sympathy around what's going on and understanding about what's going on. And the first step is the education around terms.
Yeah.
And then that leads to, okay, some open space for the experience and to be involved as far as they can do.
Yeah.
It's a very individual personal experience, but again, women need an ecosystem around them, and it includes all the men that love them.
Yes. Thank you. Lovely words. It's been an absolute pleasure, Jean, and continue to go about your mighty and kick-ass way educating the world around menopause.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Tom.
Thank you.